The Jazz Scene Podcast gives an in-depth look at the lives and stories of the musicians performing in Columbus and beyond.
Well, hey everyone, this is Rachel Asbell. I'm the Education Program Manager at Jazz Arts Group, and I am so excited to be hosting today's Jazz Scene Podcast with Nadia Nordhaus. Nadia, thank you so much for being here today and joining us, and welcome to Columbus. Well, welcome, return to Columbus. How are you today?
I am very good, thank you. I'm on my second coffee. It's delicious coffee. I love Columbus.
We've had such a good time with these coffee shops in the last few days.
It has been very good. I will admit, I've been having a good time.
Yeah. So I just want to tell you a little bit about why Nadia has joined us today. She is here with our Jazz Girls Columbus residency. This is an initiative we started last year, and we have continued it this year with a bunch of different events, including a concert we had last night that we'll talk about. And then we had a school visit the day before. We're doing this today. And then tomorrow we are going to have our actual Jazz Girls Columbus event, where we invite about 50 students and adult educators into our space to have a great time and just create a really inclusive event. So we're just so excited about that. And I want to say thanks to our sponsors for helping us make this possible. We have a grant from PNC Arts Alive and then the Amazon Web Services Community Builders Fund. So it's just been a great experience with Nadia so far to have her come here in Columbus. So I just would love to hear a little bit about your story and how you've gotten to where you are.
Okay. Well, I'll try not to talk for like an hour and a half about this. But I'm from Sydney, Australia, and I'm from an area that had really good music programs. Just went to public school, but just fortuitously had really amazing support in that area. And so I started playing classical piano when I was very young. And then in third grade, all public school children played a band instrument. So we had a choice of trumpet, trombone, flute, or clarinet. And so my piano teacher's husband played trumpet. So I'm like, oh, I'll just play trumpet. So I played in the school band, and then I played in a community band. And then when I got to high school, even though I didn't do music in school because I'd done so much out of school, I played in the band program until I think it was grade 10. And so my teacher at that time had moved schools. So I'm like, well, it's not going to be as good. So I'm going to quit.
Yeah.
So I didn't really do that much music for a while, but my taste in music was very much into rock and metal at that point. And so I didn't really see, like, I didn't really think about being a trumpet player. Like, it just never, like, I never saw it. And even though I was in this, we had a really good jazz band in my high school, and even though like 3 out of the 5 trumpets were women or female trombone section, 3 out of the 5 saxes, like no one was really going on to become professional musicians. Mm-hmm. Most of the women went on to become music teachers, mm-hmm. But I didn't want to do that. I wanted to make rock records, so I decided to move to this little country town about 400 miles north of Sydney, and so that was the only degree program for sound engineering and music industry studies. So I moved there. I didn't know anyone. I just moved up there, and while I was there, I'd been there about 6 months, I saw an ad up that they had a contemporary music program and a vocalist wanted a trumpet player to play on their recital. So I'm like, oh, that's a good way to meet people. And I hadn't actually talked to anyone for that first 6 months. I was really shy. So I'm like, oh, it'd be good to meet some people. And so I remember I got picked up in this van. Like they opened up the back of the van, and there's like a mattress with like 8 people sitting on it. And they hand me a drink. I won't say what it was. But, But they had me drink, and then we drive out to like this beautiful property, and then we're playing like Rosanna, you know, and it's really fun. And then at the end of the day, they like drop me off, and I'm like, what just happened? You know, I'm like, that was really fun, you know, but it didn't occur to me that that's what I could do for a living. Like, it just took me a really long time.
Yeah.
Like, and at that time, in this tiny country town, there wasn't any work. So I was supporting myself through school. And so, I mean, I had to go back to Sydney, and I worked in a supermarket, and I worked at Laser Tag like every day. And I just stocked up all my money for like 3 months straight, no break. And then I lived off that for 9 months. And so that's how I did it. But then I started playing in this funk band, and then I started paying my rent by music. But I'm like, still at that point, I'm like, oh, but I'm not a musician. I'm an engineer, you know. Yeah. So it's just, I ended up moving back to Sydney, and I was working distributing radio commercials. And I was there for 18 months, but I'll just talk with no filter. I got fired for being a woman. So the main producer was leaving, and they hired this other guy. And then I got brought in to the manager, and they said, we're going to let you go. And I'm like, what? And they said, yeah, basically, like, the guys on the board don't think that a woman can run the studio, so we're firing you and replacing you with a man.
It's so unreal.
So it was like, up until that point, I don't think I had ever been so angry.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, it was so unfair.
Yeah.
And for days, I was just furious. But I went over to my friend's place for coffee and cake. I'm like, what am I going to do? And she goes, why don't you move to Melbourne and study improv? And I'm like, oh, that's a great idea. I'll move in a month. So I'd never been to Melbourne, and I packed up my car, and that's what I'm like, there's a really good school there. And so I moved like 9 months before the audition. So it was really good that I got in. So I just played along with, I just had Kinda Blue and Dave Brubeck's Time Out. And I just played along with that. That was my preparation. I didn't think about like getting a lesson or anything, you know? Sure. So I just sort of turned up, and they were so like, can you read chords? And I'm like, no, but if I came to your school, I'd learn, right. You know, like, can you sight transpose? No, but if I came to your school, I'd learn, you know?
Right.
So I think, you know, I'm thinking that they maybe saw the, you know, my tenacity or the my potential, mm-hmm. you know, rather than the skill set that I was bringing in, because it was, I was just playing by ear.
Sure.
So over that 4 years, that was at the Victorian College of the Arts in Melbourne, and it was a brilliant school. It's so good, really creative, and they're saying, we don't play American jazz, we play Australian improvised music. So they would get us to, write our own music, and we did South Indian cornicole counting systems and Afro-Cuban drumming and just like a whole bunch of different stuff and some standards, but not many.
Sure.
So it was just this wild, like, really intense 4 years for me.
Yeah.
I worked really hard. And I also, like, cried every day. Like, I'm like, I'm so far behind everybody. I'm never going to catch up, you know, because everyone knew who all these people were, and I had no idea. So it's just sort of wild to look back and think, like, 4 years later, I enrolled in the master's program at Manhattan School of Music. So that was...
That's such a journey.
it really was. And like, there's a sort of a long, long story sort of attached to how that all happened too. But... so it's been a bit weird.
Yeah.
You know, just really sort of just following my nose and like pivoting like wildly at certain points.
Sure. I think that's just like such a reality for so many people though. Like, you know, not everyone goes to jazz school, you know, maybe goes to jazz school again and then like just freelances in like the straight ahead tradition. Like we may think or see as like the standard. Like, I think that this story is so real for a lot of people, and I think it's inspiring because you had, you know, barriers in your way, but you kept pivoting, like you're saying. Like, that is the skill that so many people need in so many walks of life anyway. So you just had, like, that skill from the beginning. Yeah. And I think that's just so commendable in a way, because, like, to hear you now and, like, to see you play, like, last night at Natalie's, like, you just hear, like, the product of so much just experience and hardship and beauty within it. Like, I think you carry all of that so well, you know? Your music is so beautiful, and I find it so uplifting. You know, you would not know, like, when you listen that this person has, like, pivoted and gotten all these things in their way and, you know, kept fighting for it. And I just think that's a lovely story. Like,
thank you.
I really do. I would love to know a little bit about, like, you know, moving to New York. How was that for you at first? And as you got through school and stuff, how was that?
It was definitely a culture shock. And, you know, at that time, you know, it was very much sort of straight ahead and in the tradition. And I just felt like, what am I doing here? Like, I don't know any of these tunes. And I remember there was one assignment where, for our final jury at that time, you know, it was very much sort of straight ahead and in the tradition. And I just felt like, what am I doing here? Like, I don't know any of these tunes. And I remember there was one assignment where, for our final jury at the end of second year, they would pick one of 180 standards and we had to play because they assigned 30 standards a year. And so we'd be like end of year six. So, then they would pick one and you had to play the melody and then play through two choruses unaccompanied, sort of outlining the changes. And so I remember I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, and I was actually sort of grumpy about it because I'm like, this isn't the music that I want to play. And I feel like I'm trying on someone else's clothes, you know, and that's like with transcribing too, which is, I sort of credit that exercise to really opening my ears. And that's something that I did when I was at VCA. I remember talking to a teacher. I said, how can I catch up the fastest? Like, sure. Tell me the fastest way to know this stuff. I don't have time, you know.
Yeah.
And he said transcribe. So I went to the library every day and I transcribed. And at the beginning, I didn't realize he meant like transcribe, like with your instrument or whatever. Sure. I just sort of turned up at the library and there was a CD player and I just picked random ones off the shelf. Mm-hmm. And the first one, it took me like an hour to do like four bars. And I think it was Miles. And I think he played like three notes or something. But, you know, I just, you know, like... It just took forever. I'm like, this is, you know, but at the end it was like Clifford Brown or whatever. Right. And I was so much faster and it really, really opened up my ears. Sure. But looking back on all that process, it really is like trying on someone else's clothes. Like who is this person and what are they playing and why are they playing it? Mm-hmm. And what exactly are they playing over it? And is there anything I'd like to steal, you know,
right.
And take into my own, absorb into my own vocabulary, or a friend of mine says, put it into the field, which I think is really nice. So then when you improvise and you can just like take things from the field, which I think is pretty nice.
Sure.
It was a bit rough and I was also really poor. And I didn't have any money. And so, I had some money, but like I blew through it really quickly. I did not manage it well. I discovered buffalo wings, you know, like I'm just like, you know, I'm ordering buffalo wings every day for lunch.
Wait,
like,
isn't that what you had last night?
Yes, it is. Yeah. I am consistent, if nothing else. You know, but
American delicacies.
Absolutely. I remember the first time I'm like eating buffalo wings and I'm like lying on, I rented this tiny room, which was, it was originally a 2-bedroom apartment, but they converted it to 6 bedrooms. So I had this tiny sort of room with a twin bed and like a little TV And but had cable TV, and that was really exciting.
Oh yeah,
because I was used to five channels.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm just eating buffalo wings and watching cable, and I'm like, I love America,
like the American dream.
It was. I was so happy. I'm like, this is incredible. I've made the right decision, you know. But I think for those 2 years, I don't think I slept more than 4 hours a night.
That's like, so fair.
I was working at the school 20 hours a week. I was on a student visa. So I was working at the school, like ushering, and then gradually like house managing. And then I was doing some teaching through the education program. And then I was just living off that money. So all I ate for a year was like oatmeal for breakfast. And a friend of mine who was very kind would buy me lunch. And then for dinner, I was doing, yeah, like I'd be house managing like recitals or something like that. So there's always reception food.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Like, just, definitely.
That's mine. just sneaking in, you know. So
yeah.
it was really rough, you know. And I lived in like cockroach infested apartments and then mice and, you know, like it just sort of... But I thought, I can't go home because I haven't done anything yet, you know, and I felt like I'll be a failure if I go home and I haven't broken into the scene. But no one was hiring me for gigs, like for the first 2 years. Well, I say that, but I was playing with all women bands, and those groups were the only, like I like to say, like the women caught me, the women like supported me. So I played in the Diva Jazz Orchestra and I played in this club date band run by Kit McClure. So those were the only gigs I was doing, but I was like, this is really strange. Like I had never played in an all women band, you know, before. I'm just, what is this, you know? And so, yeah, it wasn't until I think the end of 2007. And so I'd been in the States 4 years by that point. I got offered to do a rehearsal run by a guy. And I'm like, this is my big break.
Right.
You know?
For sure.
And that was with Darcy James Argue. So that was sort of like, I knew as soon as I was seen playing in that band, that would give me instant cred.
Sure. The visibility.
Know? Yeah, totally. And they're like, oh, she can play.
Right.
You know? So that's exactly what happened. And then I just sort of got into the big band stuff and then did some small group and I put out some albums and then things sort of started to build. But for the first 10 years, yeah, a bit rough.
Again, just like the perseverance there like is so real. And I wanna bring up something you said at the school visit we went to. A student asked you like what it's like to be a woman in the music business, which is a loaded question, you know, for a lot of us. But you said something that I wrote down because I just found it to be profoundly true. And you said to be a woman in the music business is to be chronically underestimated.
Yeah.
Can you like speak on that? And like, is that something you, is that like a quote that you like, that you say, you know what I mean? Like that you've thought about it and you say it into the room when you're in these kind of spaces.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've been asked that question a lot.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to know how to answer it, you know? And so I think just over the years, I've just sort of realized like, what is the thing that is sort of, you know, always prevalent? And it's just because people aren't sort of saying no to me because they're mean people, you know, or that they're not smart. But it's just that if I walk into a room, they don't expect that I can do what I can do, you know. And so there's that, you know, yeah, it's just this chronic underestimation, you know. And I think that obviously applies to all fields, you know. And most, if not all, minority groups, you know.
True.
So, I do try and be encouraging as well. I don't want to be so, like,
right.
I don't want to, and also I don't want it to come across as negative. I don't want it to be off-putting, but I just want to, it's almost just like a little warning sticker. Like, just like, hey, you're going to come across some people that's what they're going to immediately think. But I also like to say there's always a way, you know, like,
of course.
I'm always like,
you're proof of this.
If there's a no, like, I'm like, not, don't believe you, you know, like I'm just that sort of just my personality type. And maybe sure. because over my years of experience, I've always tried to find.
You have found the ways.
I've found a way. There's always a crack somewhere, right. you know, like you just got to find that. Or like, you know, what isn't there some lovely quote that's like, if a door closes, find a window, you right. know, like there's always a way. And if those doors are going to close, then now as I look at it, I'm like, good. Because that's obviously not going to be very cool, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like they are showing me their true colors. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just going to find my people elsewhere, sure. you know? So that's sort of the way I look at it.
I think that's just the best mindset to say that in front of, you know, young girls or young women or young students, mm-hmm. I think is so important because just observing them hear that in that room, like it wasn't just like, well, it's going to suck. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, you know what yeah. I mean? It's like, there are going to be things and you're going to learn how to work through them
totally.
And find a way into the music. And yeah. I think in my observation, you know, as a singer, I have these different, I would say barriers, different experiences than mm. instrumentalists, but here at JAG, like I am teaching mm-hmm. a little bit more during this month with our girls project and stuff. And I do see that like there is some, like if it's not perfect, then I can't do it at all. Mm. Or why should I, you know, yeah. attempt it if it's not going to be.
Yeah.
And that's specifically with regards to like improvisation.
Totally.
What advice would you offer to like a young student in the music who's like, how do I start this, like, right. you know, journey?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I see that a lot. And I feel like I've seen it more in the last 5 or 10 years than I did before that. Like, I feel like that it's like more of a stronger sort of mindset. And I remember sort of brainstorming with a student about it because I remember trying to get him to play something. He's like, no. And I'm like, what? Was that a question? Like, I just yeah. need you to play this thing. Like, it doesn't matter what it sounds like. I just want to hear it. And right. he's just like, no. And I'm like, okay, let's unpack this, shall we? You know, like, right. and then he's like, well, I know it's not going to be very good, so I'm just not going to do it. And so then we were talking about, well, I'm like, well, where does that come from? Like, why, you know? He's like, well, you know, there's a lot of like, in school, the exams that I do and the standardized testing and things, they're not rewarding effort. It's either the right result or nothing, you know.
I've never thought about it like that.
Yeah, it was really interesting. It makes so much sense. Yeah, it was really interesting. So, yeah, and I think there's a lot of, you know, maybe it's influences of social media where people can sort of curate their page to make it look a certain way, and then people think that that's reality, and therefore everything should be polished and beautiful and wonderful, and if it's not, then you are less than,
sure,
you know. So yeah, I think there's a lot of pressures on the young people, and so I don't know, like if improvising is something that they want to do, then you know, it's 12 notes, you know. It's like you're just yeah. putting them in an order that you right. like. So just, and I think it can be a private thing for a while, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think that you need to put the pressure on, like, I'm going to improvise and then next week I'm going to play on stage at my school hall or whatever, right. you know? Like, it can be something that you can work on and bring great joy. And I remember a moment for myself when maybe I was about, like, 14 or something, and I was at the piano, and I just decided to, I never improvised at the piano. I always just played the written notes, or approximately mm-hmm. the written notes. That's more accurate. You know, but I just remember just like improvising, and I still remember, and at the end I was like, I just really enjoyed it. And I really thought, oh, I'd like to be really good at that. That would be really good. And I didn't know what to do. And so I did nothing. You know, right. like, and so, yeah, but with the jazz band that I played in with trumpet, I mean, at least I heard people doing it and I was just sort of like, oh, I can, you know, I can just sort of like work out something by ear. And it was just a single line as opposed to like, right. you know, the piano. So that's sort of how the direction I went with that. But, you know, just listen to a track or a record or something, and then see if you can just steal something from it, you know, just a couple of notes. And if you sing it, and then just try and find it on your instrument, and then listen to something else and try and work it out and put it on your instrument, and then just do that for, you know, years, you know.
Forever.
Who was, like, your favorite person in that journey of, like, transcribing and learning, you know, the music to, like, listen and transcribe? Like, who's your hero, I guess, in that time?
Kenny Wheeler.
Okay.
Yeah. He is originally Canadian, and he lived in the UK for most of his life. He unfortunately passed away in his 80s, maybe five years ago or something, maybe a little more. But I remember where I was when I first heard his music, and it was a track of his was assigned to me for a transcription project in Melbourne. And I was on the train, and I remember I listened to it, and I can still remember it. Like, it's a really vivid memory in my head of, like, the train, and it was going around a certain bend, and I heard it, and I'm like, this is just the most gorgeous thing I've ever heard. You know, and this is, like, second year college, and I'd just been just trying to get it together and just sort of doubting whether or not I was able to do it or whether it was what I wanted to do. And then I heard Kenny Wheeler. I'm like, oh, so lovely.
Right.
Because he was very melodic and beautiful, and beautiful sound. And the recording quality, too, was fabulous. And I really love that because, you know, I was an engineer, you know, and so all of that thing is really important to me. And to me, it was combining these elements that I found really important, you know, which was, like, really superb production and beautiful sound and beautiful melody and very expressive and storytelling and all that stuff. So, yeah, so that album was on the ECM record label. So then I just did, like, a deep dive into anything released on ECM, whether it was Keith Jarrett, John Taylor. Yeah, like, I just absorbed that as much as possible and then just tried to use that as an influence of my music and my direction going forward. So
I feel like you can hear all those qualities on your records. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, I was just saying how lyrical your music is on the way here and expressive, and the just the quality of the recordings.
Yeah.
Like, it's so beautiful. Do you have a hand in, like, the producing elements of your records?
Always. And so, like, for my first record, you know, like, there was a – I noticed that on all the recordings on ECM, there were engineered and mixed by this guy in Norway called Young Erik Kungshaug. And, you know, it was always my dream to be on ECM, but I knew that, like, I'm like, you know, it's unlikely to happen, but I want that sound. So I'm like, well, why don't I ask him?
Right.
So I sent him an email. Hi, Jan Erik. You know, would you like to mix my record? And he wrote back. He's like, sure. You know, so
the power of asking, you know, for the things that you really want,
you know, and people are so much closer than you think.
Right.
Like, we put them on a pedestal and think that they're unreachable, but they're absolutely not, you know. So that was, like, such an amazing and just sort of beautiful life moment for me, because I recorded it in New York at this studio that was really beautiful. And then, like, I was over, like, touring with a band, and then I popped over to Oslo for a few days and went to Rainbow Studio, which is where they recorded all their ECM. So I was there. I'm like, this is as close as I can be, you know,
right,
without being on the label itself. And so then, just sat in the control room next to Jan Erik and heard him work and heard the sounds bloom. And
that's so amazing.
Yeah. So I'm always 100%, you know, in the production side of things, and even when, you know, I've got a couple of records on a label that's not my label, it's Nouvelle Records, and they're wonderful. And I mean, like, there's been times I'm working with the engineer and I'm saying what I want, and then listening back and I'm like, oh, we've got to change this little thing, you know, and I'm like, I'll pay for it, like, let's you know. But it's like, if it's going to be out there, then it's got to be this standard, like, you know. So so it's that's very much, it's all part of the same thing for me. So
I think that's so cool.
Yeah.
Like the hats that you wear, all of the different things you do. And again, I think that's just a great example of like for young people, like what they can be.
Yeah.
You know, because especially right now, like a lot of people are self-producing or self-recording at home, especially like since the pandemic, like for a lot of reasons, like, and that's a skill that you can offer to others and to yourself, you know, and you just get a lot more control, I think, creatively as well about the final product. So I just think that that's commendable skill that I would love to have more you know, than I do too.
And it's and you know, like anything, you get better at it over time and the more that you do it. And I think in during that process of it, like for me, it's always like I always think of my sort of 16-year-old self who was just sort of like dreaming of producing records and doing all these things. And so it's like very much like I'm like, yeah. She's doing it, you know, like it's a really good, it's a really good moment for me. Like, it's just very affirming. And I'm like, okay, this is cool. Like, you know, she was never dreaming of being the band that she was recording and producing. Mm. That wasn't in her sort of, you know,
in the cards.
She did not see that coming. That was like a big surprise, you know, but to be able to bring all those skill sets in and not feel like it was a waste of time, you know, for years doing a degree, you know, in an area that I, you know, that I'm not really, you know, like I'm not, you know, I used to like do live sound for bands, but it's like, there's no way I would do that now, you know?
Sure.
I'm like, no, let's get someone else to do that. You know, it's so stressful. Oh my gosh. You know,
I can only imagine. Yeah.
It's so stressful. Yeah. It was, yeah.
I totally get it.
You know, gosh, yeah. No, I just want to like, yeah, play some notes and leave, you know, like.
Someone else handle this.
Yeah, totally, totally.
No, I get it. I'd love to hear, just to pivot, that's the word of this podcast.
Yes.
I'd love to learn more about, like, what you're up to right now. We've briefly talked about, like, your PhD that you're going forward with. I'd love to just hear more about that and anything else that's up next for you after this weekend.
Sure. So I'm 2 years into a PhD, which I haven't really talked about that much. No, for no particular reason, then it's just not ready yet, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm doing a PhD on the teachings of my teacher, Laurie Frank, who was an absolute powerhouse. She was a lead trumpet player like in the 70s in like bands of Benny Goodman and Jerry Mulligan. And, you know, if you want to talk about women in jazz and what it was like
right.
My experience is nothing compared to what she had to go through, you know. And what's fabulous is that my students, you know, it's nothing like what I had to go through. So, you know, we're all standing on each other's shoulders, which I think is really beautiful. So it's on Laurie's teaching and also on her teacher, who was Carmine Caruso, who was very much out of left field, incredible teacher for like 50 years in New York. And so all the brass players, no matter what genre, would come to Carmine, and you know, with any sort of issues that they're having, you know, and he devised this really amazing series of exercises to help you with your chops and playing. And it was just like a general was just like this almost like a Zen master, you know. And certainly, you know, Laurie, you know, was his mentee, and so she brought those elements into her lessons as well. And so I just want to document that in a way that I think they would have been happy with. And then as I've been researching, I've just been uncovering a whole bunch of information. So I've sort of got, it's so much that to me, the dissertation is just the beginning.
Sure.
That's the easy part. She says now, you know, but it's
keep
like,
us posted.
Yeah, but it's going to be more than that. So it'll be a dissertation and there'll be, you know, some books and maybe a video series and maybe a podcast or a documentary and stuff. So I've got this 5-year plan of really just trying to do the best job that I can at documenting all of that. And at the same time, I just accepted a position as a trumpet professor at Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin. Yay!
That's so amazing.
Yeah, I'm super Congrats. Thrilled. Thank you. Yeah. So I'm going to be moving out there in a few months. And so that will allow me to teach and build a studio, which is something that I've been wanting to do forever. Mm-hmm. And then it also allows me to do all this work.
Mm-hmm.
And it also allows me to travel. I'll still be playing in the bands that I play in.
Sure.
So that's sort of what my life looks like, you know, from sort of August onwards. And up until then, I'm like just traveling, yeah, like every week with a different band or a different organization.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... Yeah, it's a lot, but everything is wonderful and it's completely manageable. And I'm just, you know,
everything.
Where am I today? You know, right. Like, yeah.
Life itinerary.
Yeah, which is awesome. I mean, I feel very fortunate. Like, my life is wonderful, you know. It's like, finally, like, oh, you know, like it's not been smooth sailing,
sure.
One might say, you know. So to get to a place, it's almost... You know, where you can just sort of breathe for a second
mm-hmm.
and just go, oh, okay.
Right. You know, I still love that for you.
Yeah, thank you. Me too.
I hope you have all the fireplaces and cozy vibes.
Yes, absolutely.
I think we should talk about that, though, because mm-hmm. you're one of the few jazz musicians that I feel like is so about, like, hobbies and stuff, as well as, like, your passion and your career, which is so important, like, mm-hmm. work-life balance. How mm-hmm. do you... maintain that on the road constantly?
Well, yeah, it's definitely been something that hasn't come naturally. Like, I feel like my personality type is just like, just deep dive in. And so, I mean, for years, it's like, I would work, I never had a day off. Like, I just like worked. And now I don't do that. You know, like I try and schedule like a day off a week. I mean, it doesn't happen.
Sure.
All the time.
The thought is there.
The thought is there, you know, but I do try and like the days that I'm in New York, you know, I do try and schedule like break time and or like time to do things. I schedule like hanging out with friends. Like I'm like, if I need to schedule like one social thing like a week, you know, and if I can have a day off, then that's what I'll do. I do an online yoga class with like a student that I taught at summer camp, like in 2004, you know, she was like 14 and now she's, you know, she's this amazing, amazing teacher. And, you know, it's like 20 years later. So yeah. And so I like to do other things that aren't music because I don't define myself as just a musician, you know. Like I'm a human having a human experience, you know. But like I'm an aunt, that's very important to me, you know, and I'm a friend, you know, and I, you know, I like doing creative things. And so my mom is a big knitter, and so she got me into knitting like about 20 years ago. And so that to me is like something tangible that I can do that isn't like, all the other stuff.
Sure.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so it's really lovely to be, you know, and you can just sort of like make things. So like doing that and like listening to like true crime podcasts, like I'm like, I don't need anything else in life, you know,
right.
Like what's a trumpet, you know, like. You know,
Didn't you tell me yesterday in the car that you were making a bear?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about this bear?
So by the time this is out, I think he will have received this bear. But a dear friend of mine in Melbourne, his partner just had a baby. And so I'm like, oh, this is like March this year. Like for me, like I'm like, I thought I had another year to like, because I usually do like baby blankets, you know, but I'm like quick. So I'm like, I'll knit a bear, you know, because I just follow a pattern. Like I'm not like, you know, like my mom is like, is, you know, she just makes up patterns, and I'm not on that level. It totally is. I'm like, I am not on that level. I just need a pattern that tells me what to do, and I'll do it. And then at the end, a bear, you know,
like, appears.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, I've been working. I needed a leg last night, you know, like, so it's like,
oh, it's in Columbus.
It's in Columbus. Here. Yeah. It's in my hotel room. So it's like, I travel like half my bag was like a giant bag of stuffing, you know, like if security opened it up, they'd be like,
might be a little confused.
Who is this? What is happening? You know?
Oh my gosh.
So anyway, so I love that. Yeah. So it's just like, you know, it's just a little gift, you know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't know if we've talked about Jazz Bear, but we have our, like, mascot for our, like, early childhood programs is Jazz Bear. So that's so hilarious because we have them all around. Maybe we can grab you one before you leave Columbus because he's a little Jag shirt.
Oh, that's like very red, sweet.
And, like, I just feel like that is on theme. We can give you a shirt for your bear.
Oh, my gosh.
Honorary Jazz Bear.
This is too much. This is too much. My mind is blown.
I think that would be the best thing for you to leave with as a souvenir is a Jazz Bear.
Excellent. I love it.
Oh my goodness. Well, I think that maybe that's all.
That's all.
But well, I want to say thank you so much for just being here in Columbus with us and sharing your story and being a great role model for, I think, not just our students, but hopefully anyone else who's listening to this and checking out our Jazz Girls stuff. It's just been a great week with you, and I'm so excited for tomorrow. Do you have any thoughts or vibes that you want to put into the space on what we're going to do tomorrow here at the Jazz Academy?
I'm really excited. I mean, I think what is great with working with young people is that they get to see somebody doing something that maybe they haven't thought about, you know, in certain terms. So, for example, I know how influential and how important it was when I was 19 was the first time that I saw an all-women jazz band. Yeah. I'd never seen one woman play professionally in the jazz scene until then. And that was when I was, you know, in my engineering days, you know, and I remember seeing them just going, "Whoa, I never thought about that." Sure. So for me, like my most important job, I think, is just being seen. So to be able to have that opportunity is really wonderful for me. And, you know, it's like you know, as soon as you start playing, you could just see everybody's eyes just widen a little bit and like, okay, like that's my job. Like I can go back to knitting my bear, you know, like, you know, like that's it, because it's like, they just need to see it. They just need to see one person, you know, do that. And so it's going to be really amazing, like working with a great faculty and all these women and non-binary musicians, and it's just going to be, it's going to be a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah, I've been calling this my Super Bowl, like for real. Like to me, this is the day that, like, since the last one, I've been waiting for the, you know, tomorrow, just because it's so special to see it come together also as a woman in jazz, you know, to see all these young people just together in a space.
Absolutely.
Like, to see that, I think, as a young person, like, I try to imagine, like, if I was one of them, if I was, like, 12 or 13 years old again, like, I think it would have changed a lot for me because, you know, as a singer, I'm usually also the only one, right? You know, because unless I hire another singer.
You're right.
Just because of all the things we've talked about. So for me, it's also, you know, I feel a little bit of my young self, my, like, little Rachel.
Yes.
Like, feeling like, like, this is welcoming for me, too, you know, even though I'm, like, the administrative sort of manager of it. But I still feel like it's just, like, it's just the best. So
it really is.
I'm really so excited.
Yeah, me too. It's great to be able to be in a position to, like, build this community and support everybody. And, and it's always interesting to see, like, you know, we may not see some of these young people for a while, but you never know, like, down the track, 5 years, 10 years or something, they'll be like, oh, I was at Jazz Girls Day. And I had this great experience. I've got a bear, you know. You know, so that's always just like, that will probably happen, you know. Which is lovely to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, we're nurturing right now. But yeah, I think it's already just shown, like, in our youth jazz program and just other things in the community. Like, I see more girls in our program here, you know, and our Jazz Girls project that we just wrapped up with was bigger than last year. This mm-hmm. event tomorrow is bigger than last year. Like, mm-hmm. there's kids coming from around the state now, not just this, you know, central Ohio area. So I just think, like, it's so promising, mm-hmm. like, you know, to see the growth and to see the just the positivity that comes from it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of the overarching theme of, like, this work and also your story is, like there is a battle, perhaps. Mm-hmm. There is a journey, but, like, you find your way and you find your people that see you, that believe in you, that inspire you, you know, to
those
be
are the
best
people you
version.
Those are the people that you want around you. Yeah. So this Jazz Girls Day is a prime example of that.
Well,
for
I'm
sure.
so excited. Yeah, thank
you,
too. Nadia, for
thank
being here.
Thank you very
here.
Much. Thank you.
And thanks to Meredith and Carly for producing this with us. And, yeah, check us out on, you know, jazzartsgroup.org. And we have social media at the Jazz Academy. I'm sure we'll be posting throughout the day. You know, when this is put into the universe, Jazz Girls Columbus will have passed. But you should still check us out anyway. And thanks for tuning in.
The Jazz Scene is presented by Jazz Arts Group of Columbus, America's oldest nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing the art of jazz. Our theme music is titled 3/4 Times by Michael Cox. This episode was produced and engineered by Carly Kime Law. Subscribe to The Jazz Scene wherever you get your podcasts.